everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Billboard's Senior Director of Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
Hello, Katie. You know, for the past 2 weeks, I've been asking you about your kids' Halloween costumes, and I finally got to see them on one of your social media accounts.
Yes.
I don't know whose it was. It might have been your child's. I don't know. But they turned out amazing.
Oh my gosh. Grandma came through with a homemade pirate ship out of a wagon for the pirate and the parrot. And I could not have been more thrilled. Plus, then we had a vehicle to take them trick-or-treating. So it was just all around good stuff.
Well, I don't know how you're going to top it for next year, but you have 360 or so days to plan.
We might not. We'll see.
Well, now you have to think about what you're going to dress up for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes. The famous costume holiday of Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is just left out. You know, I actually was truly thinking about this the other day, and I've actually wrote about this before for Billboard as I fall into a hole. But my point was, like, there's so much, like, Halloween kind of music, and there's so much Christmas music, but Thanksgiving, which in itself is a big family-oriented holiday where a lot of people get together and play music, there isn't a lot of Thanksgiving-specific music. And I feel like it's just crying out for someone to make a more Thanksgiving music.
Well, just please check out Gary Truss' article on Billboard.com about Thanksgiving songs, which is all culled together, like, you know, doing the mashed potato and things of that nature, you know, like parts of the meal.
Like, everybody loves yams time. It's yam time. Everybody loves a yam. That's not a song.
There's a turkey lurkey time.
Oh, right. Song. Of course. And don't forget Adam Sandler's The Thanksgiving Song.
Exactly.
All right. We've fallen into a pit. We're going to get out of it right now because, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Lana Del Rey and Elton John both notched their latest top 10 albums on the Billboard 200 chart, how an old album from the Rolling Stones and a new album from Duran Duran both hit the top 40 on the chart, and how Adele's Easy on Me holds firm at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, while Doja Cat lands her fourth top 10 with Need to Know.
Also on the show, we have news about Ed Sheeran being out of COVID quarantine and ready to perform on Saturday Night Live this weekend, as well as breaking news that Cardi B has been announced as the host of the 2021 American Music Awards. Stay tuned to hear us chat about Cardi's first big hosting gig in just a bit. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up, Drake's Certified Lover Boy returns to number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart for a fifth non-consecutive week on top as the set rebounds from number two. It earned 74,000 equivalent album units, which was down 10% in the United States in the week ending October 28th, according to MRC data. Also in the top 10 on the Billboard 200, Lana Del Rey achieves her eighth top 10 and her second of 2021 as Blue Bannister steps in at number eight with 33,000 equivalent album units. Del Rey visited the Billboard 200 top 10 earlier this year with Chemtrails Over the Country Club, which debuted and peaked at number two on the April 3rd chart. All told, Blue Bannister is Del Rey's eighth consecutive and total top 10. Nice.
She has become prolific.
Yeah, I think it did kind of surprise some people that she had two albums come out so closely together this year.
It was supposed to be even earlier too. Blue Bannister was supposed to come, I think, in the summer.
That's
and
right.
It got pushed back, but still, two albums in a year is quite the pace.
Yeah. Also in the top 10, Elton John lands his 21st top 10 album as his all-star, all-collaborative release, The Lockdown Sessions, debuts at number 10 with 29,000 units. Lockdown includes Elton's latest top 40 Billboard Hot 100 hit, Cold Heart, which is the Panow remix with Dua Lipa, as well as collaborations with a who's who of artists, including Young Thug and Nicki Minaj, Charlie Puth, Eddie Vedder, Stevie Wonder, and Stevie Nicks, among many, many others. John notched his first top 10 over 50 years ago when his self-titled album climbed 11 to 7 on the January 30th, 1971 dated chart. It peaked at number 4 a week later, by the way. Breaking down his 21 top 10s by decade, he had 13 top 10 albums in the 1970s.
Speaking of prolific.
Yeah, I know, right? Two in the 1990s, which means he had none in the 1980s. One in the 2000s, four in the 2010s, and now one in the 2020s. John is in a select group of acts with at least 20 top 10 albums on the Billboard 200, dating back to March of 1956, when the list began publishing on a regular weekly basis. And I won't read off every artist who has had at least 20 top 10s, but I will tell you that the Rolling Stones have the record for the most top 10 albums with 37. And in terms of soloists, Barbra Streisand has the most among soloists with 34 top 10 albums. Speaking of the Rolling Stones, next up, staying with the Billboard 200, the Rolling Stones' 1981 album Tattoo You returns to the chart for the first time since 1982, thanks to its recent 40th anniversary deluxe reissue. The album re-enters at number 24 this week. It originally spent 9 weeks at number one back in 1981, and is the band's most recent number one of a so far 9 chart-topping albums. Also in the top 40 on the Billboard 200, friends of the podcast Duran Duran earn its 13th top 40 charting album as the group's latest studio effort, Future Past, debuts at number 28. By the way, it's two steps below Dua Lipa's own Future album, Future Nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Duran Duran got its first top 40 album in January of 1983 with Rio, which went on to peak at number 6. And weirdly, or maybe I'm thinking this is weird, but it's not really that weird. Weirdly, of all the band's charting albums, their highest charting album is actually a live album, the 1984 release Arena, which peaked at number 4. I just think that's weird. Maybe Katie doesn't. I don't know.
I mean, well, we've talked about live albums and live recordings before, and it feels like the 80s were a especially big heyday for those. So it makes a little more sense.
I think chart geeks will think that is a bit weird, because you think of like Rio as like an iconic Duran Duran album, and you think it naturally would have charted higher. It's one of those things where Arena came out after Rio was hugely popular, and Arena was kind of basically coming out like right as Duran Duran was like peaking in terms of their huge popularity. Right. And so it almost didn't matter what was on the Arena live album. It would have charted high anyways.
Right. Whereas Rio probably just like slowly built and had like, you know, if you look at the concentrated success of Arena. But I would like to say, if you are a Duran Duran fan, you need to listen to our Simon Le Bon interview from earlier this year, when we spoke very early about the album when they released their lead single from it.
Yeah. And you can listen to how I muted Simon right in the middle of the interview. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's the part I really wanted to flag for everybody.
Yeah. Well, lastly, over on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, Adele's Easy On Me stays at number one for a second week, while Doja Cat's Need to Know rises 11 to 9, becoming her fourth top 10 hit. She earlier visited the region with Say So, featuring Nicki Minaj, which ruled for 1 week in May of 2020. And she also hit the top 10 on Ariana Grande's 34 plus 35, which was featuring Doja Cat and Megan Thee Stallion. And that hit number 2 this past January. And with Kiss Me More featuring SZA, which hit number 3 this past July.
And now it's time for some of the biggest headlines over on Billboard.com. So Ed Sheeran announced back on October 24th that he was in isolation due to a positive COVID-19 test. But on Tuesday, he revealed he's out of quarantine. He's gotten the all clear to resume his normal business. And he wrote in an Instagram caption that he's excited to hit the ground running with work again. And SNL is still on, so tune in Saturday. Now, when he first announced that his, you know, he'd been diagnosed with COVID, it was unclear whether his Saturday Night Live gig was still on the table. But he assured fans that he will be on stage in New York this weekend alongside first-time host Kieran Culkin, who stars on Succession.
Ed Sheeran's going to be there, whether he has to, if he has to be in a hazmat suit, he's going to be there.
Yeah, we weren't sure because, like I said, it was October 24th when he announced and he said he was canceling all in-person appearances. And so fans worried that he, you know, the timeline wasn't going to work out with SNL. But obviously they've gotten that figured out. And actually, breaking news, SNL announced all of the hosts and musical guests for the month of November, reconfirming Ed, of course, for this weekend, but also adding Taylor Swift for the following weekend and Saweetie for the weekend after that.
You
it's
know,
timed with the re-release of Red, if you were wondering about Taylor, the Taylor timing.
Well, yeah, the Taylor Taylor time, that makes sense. I just assumed Adele would be in the mix somewhere, but I guess not.
Well, if you do the math on that, what's that? November 6th, then November 13th, then November 20th is Saweetie. So I guess, yeah, no Adele. I'd say we could say no Adele pretty safely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as of yet. Let's see. And I was going to say, Ed is promoting his latest album, Equals, which was released this past Friday and includes lead singles Bad Habits and Shivers. Keith, do we have any indication where Equals might end up on next week's Billboard 200 albums chart yet?
I have lots of indications, lots of suggestions, lots
prognostications.
Lots of forecastimications. From everything I have seen, the early reads seem to indicate that it's going to have a high debut. I am always reluctant to say like what position it will be in, but it seems like it's doing quite well out of the gate, and it should have a really, really robust number. I don't want to say it's going to be number one because because God help me, I might jinx it. But we'll see. But it looks like it's off to a really great start.
I'd like to predict that it will be number one in the UK. That's my prediction.
I mean, sure.
And I say this after Bad Habits was number one for like 11 weeks and then Shivers took its place for like another 3 weeks until Elton John unseated it. Anyway, the lead singles have done particularly well in Ed's native UK. So I feel like his country people are behind him.
Yeah.
In other news, Cardi B is hosting the American Music Awards. A 5-time AMA winner herself, Cardi has 3 nominations at this year's show, including Favorite Female Hip Hop Artist and 2 nods for Up as Favorite Music Video and Favorite Hip Hop Song. And, you know, our awards editor, Paul Grine, who's been on our show before, pointed out in his article that Cardi joins a long list of hip hop stars who have hosted or co-hosted the AMAs in the past, which include MC Hammer in 1992, Will Smith in 1994, Queen Latifah in 1995, LL Cool J in 2001, Diddy in 2002, and Pitbull in both 2013 and 2014.
Can J-Lo count as a hip-hop adjacent artist?
No.
Okay, fine.
Oh, no, fine to say adjacent, I suppose, but I wouldn't call her a hip-hop artist by any definition.
It's funny.
But yes, she's been on many hip-hop songs.
I don't remember a lot of AMA hosts full stop. So I didn't realize all those folks had hosted the show. Wow.
I know. It's quite the list. And I remember Pitbull because I was working at Billboard by then. So I remember covering those shows, but I don't remember the list before then either. So in a press release announcing the Cardi news, she said, quote, "When I received the invite to host the AMAs, I was so excited. I'm ready to bring my personality to the AMAs stage." So, Keith, speaking of her personality, I wanted to talk about why. I'll just go on a soliloquy for a moment. I want to talk about why I love this pick. I think that one of Cardi's biggest, maybe her biggest strength, is her personality and her just like infectiousness when it comes to every like social media post that she does, where she's just so fun and hilarious and like off the cuff and inventing words and all the stuff she does. you put this on an award show stage, it's not going to be boring. And that's kind of the thing that a host is there to do. They're supposed to keep things moving, keep things exciting. The other thing is that all of her fellow nominees are going to love that she's up on stage. I feel like the audience is going to be on her side. I feel like at home and in the room, everybody's going to be on her side because she's so fun. So I love this. And I think that it's kind of like a no-brainer for her to be hosting things. Now that you've heard my monologue, Keith, what do you think about this choice?
I mean, I think in terms of just the get of having a dynamic, magnetic personality, kudos to the AMAs for booking Cardi. I immediately, as sort of a technical person that, you know, has occasionally been sort of like on a live mic hosting something, I also know that you have to be very quick. You have to listen to the person. You have to move things along. And I do kind of wonder, she's so good at being kind of like off the cuff and like, you know, just rolling with it. I wonder, like, will we be able to see like Cardi's personality shine, or will it be kind of like, you know, kind of like held back in a way because she has to kind of like keep all the moving parts kind of together? You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like
she might be in her head a little too much, or feel maybe a little more reined in than normal, because, you know, obviously, as we've seen from, you know, looking at like a run of show for something like this, things are down to the second.
Yeah.
On a broadcast like this. And so, you know, being off the cuff could also be a little bit of a potential issue, in the sense that, like, you know, you've got 30 seconds for this bit, you've got 15 seconds for this bit,
right?
And you shouldn't go over either way.
Right.
So I see what you're saying. But I think that the thing that I would point to would be something like her interview with Bernie Sanders. Okay. This is a moment where, like, she just kind of like was riffing, asking every question that was on her mind. And I feel like the way she was able to manage that interview and like do such a fun, good interview with him, it was sort of practice for doing, like, just being thrown on a stage and maybe an answer comes at you that you don't expect, and something's going to come at you that you don't expect during an award show. And she handled that really well, rolled with the punches. So I think that she's going to be great.
I think the optimal hope here, that's such a terrible phrase, is that it is kind of like the polished kind of acting that she did in something like Hustlers.
It's
like, you know, she...
My favorite movie of whatever that was 2 years ago. I love that movie.
With something like, and I say that because, like, you know, sometimes you are involved doing bits or pre-taped bits that could be... that could sort of take off kind of like the heavy lifting of the show, where it's like, oh, you have a really funny pre-taped moment with her interacting with other people. But then also you just sort of expect that she probably will have like a kind of wild opening show moment. And that will set the tone for the rest of it. And you kind of hope that throughout the show, she will just be kind of like thrown at like celebrities in the audience and see like happens with Cardi and Diana Ross in the audience, or
hand her a stick mic and send her into the crowd for sure. Love that idea.
I mean, and then just, you know, have that guy in the back with the button pressing the beeping to just censor her in case something happens. Just get ready.
Be ready, guy. Oh, so I think we're on board for this. I think if nothing else, it's going to be fun and exciting for sure. Like, I think that she will definitely add just a spice to it that maybe hasn't been there.
Maybe she can get Bernie Sanders to present an award.
There you go. I think that's a great idea. Or maybe he could sit in the front row and recreate his meme with like the mittens, the crossed over mittens at the inauguration. Maybe I'm the only one who wants to see that.
Look, Bernie's going to still be probably in D.C. trying to, you know, get some laws passed. Maybe he probably has other things to worry about, but that would be great.
Fair.
Yeah.
And one final note, I'll wait and see how this one goes, but I just feel like she makes so much sense as a host. I'm like already dreaming up other things that she could and should host. So, like, I don't know. I mean, even, like, not necessarily live things or award shows, but, like, you know, it feels like Cardi should do, like, Kids Say the Darndest Things and, like, interview children or something. I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, this is the beginning of potential, like, hosting career phase for Cardi, and I love it. And I hope that we also might get new music soon, because it's been a minute since we've had some Cardi music as well.
When she gets yes to all those things, and I immediately had another thought, another great sort of, like, off-the-cuff Cardi moment when I think, like, the government shut down or something, and I think it was January of last year, maybe, and she went on social media, and she just basically riffed, and it was, like, it just felt real, it felt authentic, it felt
genuine. Are you talking about the famous coronavirus rant from the beginning of the pandemic, or...
Maybe, no. I don't know, but maybe it was that. It's just, I think it's just there's a certain kind of genuineness that comes through that I hope that they are able to amplify and get across, and that nothing is kind of lost in kind of right. the shuffle of doing a live broadcast where maybe like totally. Some of that Cardi B magic gets lost. I hope we don't lose any of that.
Yeah, it needs to feel like a Cardi Instagram live, but for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you'd like to tune in to this very special primetime Cardi B Instagram live, the 2021 AMAs are set to air live from the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles on Sunday, November 21st. Oh, and I suppose I'd be remiss if I did not add that we share a parent company with MRC Entertainment, which produces the American Music Awards. We'd be talking about it regardless, but let me give that disclaimer as well.
Katie might be at the show this year. Are they going to have people? And is there going to be a press room?
I don't know if there's an in-person press room yet, so stay tuned, and I may or may not be involved. Last year, I was in a virtual press room for the AMAs, so we'll see what direction they go this time.
And now, it's time for the chart stat of the week. Forty years ago this week, Daryl Hall and John Oates' Private Eyes hit number one on the Hot 100, marking the third of six chart-topping hits for the duo. The song rose 3-1 on the chart dated November 7th, 1981, and spent 2 weeks atop the list. Altogether, Hall and Oates has collected 16 top 10 hits on the Hot 100. They've had more number ones and more top 10s than any duo in the chart's history. While Hall & Oates haven't been on the Hot 100 since 2005, they most recently charted with a new release on any Billboard chart back in 2018 with the single Philly Forget Me Not alongside
the
band.
That was that one with Train, right?
Yeah. That's
just you were about to say that.
Literally what I was going to say with Train. It peaked at number 12 on the Adult Contemporary Airplay chart.
It's a good little song. I don't know if you know it, but it's a great Hall & Oates record.
I love how Katie was just like clearly not reading along in the script. She's like, yeah, no. Was that with Train? I'm like, yes.
I was just listening. I was like, oh, yeah, Philly Forget Me Not. Yeah.
So there you have it. 40 years ago this week, Private Eyes hit number one on the Hot 100 chart. We've reached the end of our big shoe. By the way, one half of Hall & Oates is a friend of the podcast.
I got to talk to Daryl Hall on the flipping phone. That was like 5 years ago. Which was a real treat. I'm a huge Hall & Oates fan. I got to see them at the Troubadour one time.
Really?
Yeah, because they kicked off their career in L.A. They kicked off their L.A. performing career at the Troubadour in the 70s. And they did like a return to the Troubadour performance in like 2011, 2010. I'm not sure. I was working at MTV at the time.
So it was like you and 100 other people in there, basically.
Oh, my God. It was so small. And I mean, they let me in first, too. Like, this is all thanks to my now husband, Dan, then fiance, then or boyfriend or whatever, who was like, you're with MTV. Tell them go up to the front of the line. And I'm like, no, I'm scared. And we did. And when I got in there, it was like it was just us. So like I planted myself at the stage and then the crowd came and filed in behind me. And it was a crazy experience. So I was just looking up at Daryl Hall and John Oates the whole time.
Did you walk up to the beginning of the line and said, listen, I can't go for that. No can do. I have to be at the very front of the crowd inside.
I wish I had said that now that you say it, but I was probably much more like, is there like an early press entrance or something of that nature?
Katie's gotten so much wiser through the years. She doesn't right. take any BS anymore.
That's right.
So what song should we go out on?
You just said it. I can't go for that. Parenthetical title, no can do. All is right, the obvious answer.
We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.